Eight, Citizen Science, and this is a briefing by Mr. Bill and Ms. Bundy.
Thank you, Chairman, Commissioners, Deputy Director. I'm Wendy Connolly. I'm with the Wildlife Program Diversity Division. I'm a Citizen Science Coordinator. It's a fairly new endeavor for our group, and I'm here with Bill Twight from the Director's Office.
And I'm here as one of the projects I've been working on is with the Wildlife Program to extend some of the bird-related citizen science programs in particular, and we've had a lot of success with that over the last year and thought it was a good opportunity to provide you with an update.
Bill has been a big champion for us, as well as our science division director, John Pierce, and Eric Gardner, who you all are very familiar with. So we're going to lay out some great examples and some really interesting projects that are coming up, and I hope we keep you engaged at least until your stomach starts to grumble for lunch. My background is as a wildlife biologist. I've been doing this for about 25 years. This is a fairly new endeavor for me, transitioning into citizen science. Out of the field and out of strategic planning comes a realization that conservation does not happen without people. And so I've completely transitioned my career to really put that at the forefront of where I hope we're headed in the diversity division. Our agency's wildlife program benefits from many volunteer efforts through hunter education, access site volunteers, our master hunters, cleanup on wildlife areas, and that sort of thing. But today I'm going to focus on volunteer efforts that are founded on science and where that science directly contributes to the information that we gather and helps inform the work that our biologists do. Let's make sure I'm poking the right button here. So we use a variety of directed funding and other resources to meet our agency's mission. And we're participating in national efforts like the Blue Ribbon Panel to secure funding that support all of the values of WDFW and the constituents that care about those efforts. Citizen science projects are resources that provide capacity and data and agency support and potentially even grant match. So they are true concrete resources that help support our work. And the Wildlife Program is exploring and implementing citizen science as one of those ways to meet those needs. The soon-to-be-released 2015 State Wildlife Action Plan, or SWAP, identifies 218 species of greatest conservation need and habitats of greatest conservation need for which the Wildlife Program is directly responsible. The SWAP is a wellness and prevention approach to conservation that aims to get ahead of that more resource-intensive recovery effort after a species has been listed. And the SWAP identifies conservation needs, including gathering information to help inform our conservation actions to move that conservation needle. So citizen science gives us tools to expand our capacity and our effectiveness, and the SWAP helps define opportunities to engage citizen scientists, including 7 million people within Washington, the visitors who come to see our great resources every single day, and they can help us collect and manage and analyze and do work that's relevant to the jobs that we have to do to manage the resources of our state. So all the life cycles of data are important to make good decisions and enable people to understand the decisions that we make. This is not a cradle-to-grave, one-direction pathway, but a cycle of data steps that help us adapt the questions we ask and the actions that we take. This all takes somebody to do it. No one agency or organization can do it alone, and the public is really, truly engaged. They want to help, and citizen science gives us that avenue. So citizen science fits nearly every element of the Wildlife Program Biennium Conservation Plan, our principles, and our 20-year vision. I put a few of those up on the slide, just those that are directly relevant to our WDFW citizen science piece of that. We are purpose-driven, and into public partnering to develop information we can really use. And this gives us an opportunity to communicate with all of our audiences, perhaps some audiences that we have not traditionally reached very well in the past. So I transitioned my career to this work because the foundations of citizen science are meaningful to me. Telling our important stories, having a dialogue with the public about the decisions that we make as a state fish and wildlife agency, and engaging people in our work. So in support of the conservation plan, the wildlife program crafted a conservation initiative to guide and drive citizen science in our work this biennium, and importantly, set the stage for future projects. So I'm working with wildlife program teams right now to develop criteria for a set of new projects. We'll be taking cues from that state wildlife action plan, and we hope to draft a list of potential focal projects in the next 3 months. We've grouped citizen science into three general types for the initiative, all of which emphasize data collection that our biologists need. While not every project fits tightly into one of those buckets, these three types will help us discuss WDFW's level of effort, our volunteer management, the data structures and data management that's important, and the engagement benefits. So some of the protocols and tools that we use can be applied to more than one project type, and I thought I'd go over a couple of the really great examples. This is just sort of skipping a rock over the top of some examples that are out there right now. It's not a compendium of all of the great things that we're doing with this tool, but there's some really great biologists out there that are doing some good work, so I thought I'd highlight their efforts. So one of these project types is marketed. It's more crowdsourced. These are things that are publicly available on our website that anybody that's coming to our website can take a peek at. Typically, this provides information to engage the public, but it does not have much formal training to the volunteer who wants to get engaged. These are launched online. They have an online guide. They may include outreach to a few partner organizations to get their volunteers engaged. And there's limited coaching by our staff to keep for a public contributor. But these usually typically provide us some very basic observation data, and they can help inform a larger scoped, more elaborate project down the line. So our Moose Survey app is one of those for smartphones. It's one of these projects that encourages the public to report moose by game management unit, particularly north of Spokane, between September and November every year. And these observations are paired with other moose information to help wildlife managers monitor moose populations and relate those public observations to other impacts. And an important piece of any of our citizen science work is that feedback loop that tells the participant that their work is going to be meaningful and used by our department biologists. So for this particular one, each winter a link is provided on the Moose Survey webpage so participants can see the results and the values of their contributions. Our WDFW Public Incidental Wildlife Observation app and online interface is another crowdsourced project. The companion marketing online encourages the public to add observations of species of greatest conservation need straight out of the State Wildlife Action Plan. Through this effort, we've received 421 new SGCN observations from the tool, and we're engaged in other marketed and crowdsourced efforts through eBird Northwest. And Bill, who's a huge champion of that, is going to talk a little bit about that.
eBird Northwest is a regional portal of the international effort called eBird that's headed by Cornell University, National Audubon, and others. And what we've been able to do as an agency working with our partners at Klamath Bird Observatory are create a regional front for it that gives local birders and folks who are interested in the Northwest some focused information on what's going on here and sort of makes them feel a little bit more like they're contributing to something with a regional feel. We're really excited about this as one of the probably most productive, but also best examples of this, the market type, or sort of the publicly sourced types of citizen science. It's relatively low investment for our staff and for us, but a high return in terms of our visibility as an agency, and a high return as well in terms of our credibility as an agency with Northwest birders in particular. So this is what it looks like when you go to the eBird Northwest page, which you can get to a bunch of different ways, both off desktop computers, but also off of smartphones. And as you can see, there's a broad range of tabs up there. And what we want to focus on today, just to give you a sense of some of the power that we've been obtaining out of eBird Northwest, is that citizen science tab as well.
There are a lot of different portals all over the globe. eBird out of Cornell is the mothership, essentially. And then there are a bunch of regional and state-based portals that are out there.
We have one of the more active ones, though. And what we've understood from eBird is it's not worth doing this unless you can keep the site current and fresh and relevant to your local birders. So a lot of areas are just covered by the overall program called eBird. So... wanted to see. We moved on already.
No,
we haven't.
No, not until you tell me.
So let's move into one of the in-depth sort of examinations, though, that you can do with eBird. This is one of our favorite slides. Pygmy nuthatch is one of the species that are covered in our statewide wildlife action plan, and as most of you know, in order to manage a species, you've got to have some information on it. This is the information that we had in our databases prior to picking up eBird Northwest. We knew enough about pygmy nuthatches just from our biologists' work in their habitats and everything else to know they were species we really should be paying fairly close attention to, but we had essentially nothing on it. As soon as we sort of hooked in to the eBird databases and began to pull those in, all of a sudden we had a pretty well-populated map. And again, this is all citizen science. These are all just birders reporting through eBird. And when a report comes into eBird, it's not just automatically accepted, as Wendy's mentioned a couple of times in talking about citizen science. There have to be data verification, data quality checks. And eBird is no exception. It's got a very finely grained, well-thought-out set of error checks. And so, by and large, the data as they come in are pretty useful. You still have to scrutinize them a little bit, but there's not a lot of work left to do once you've got the original data dump. And as you can see, there's a pretty clear pattern here of distribution of nuthatches surrounding the Columbia Basin, mostly in the areas where the ponderosa pines show. And indeed, when we overlaid the existing observations on our HUC data, which are habitat-based, watershed-based data, all of a sudden you can see that they very, very nicely fit the pattern. And so we went from having no tool to monitor pygmy nuthatch and essentially almost no means for implementing the recommendations in the State Wildlife Action Plan to having a tool that's ready to go. Now it's a fairly simple matter of simply watching these data over time and seeing if there's changes in distribution. Or looking for some of the other parameters that we've identified in the action plan. Thanks, Cynthia. We can also, Brad, Commissioner.
So there probably aren't a higher density of pygmy nuthatches in Spokane. There's a higher density of birders in Spokane. Are you using this as presence-absence? How are you vetting that? The fact that birders all go to the same place to look for birds.
At present, its greatest strength is still presence-absence. But as Cornell develops analytical tools to be used on eBird, we're now looking at where are we at? We're over, trying to remember how many checklists we've gotten in.
Oh, I don't have that.
But in Washington State alone, we're generating 10,000 to 50,000 checklists a month statewide. And as those data begin to pile up, we begin to have a pretty rich data set that's actually amenable to a broad range of analytical tools. A lot of scientists working with the eBird database nationwide are developing those tools, and we expect that within a few years we'll be able to go from the very simple presence-absence into some fairly detailed analyses, just by winnowing through the data and just choosing the submissions that have pretty clear effort data associated with them, or submissions from the same area month after month after month after month that allow you to do some of the more in-depth. There are, at this point internationally, there are ornithologists who are just awed by the amount of data in front of them who are developing new tools for analysis. And those are all the sorts of things that this agency can then pick up and begin to work with. So, but pygmy nuthatches are also quite common around Spokane. They really like the ponderosa pine forest around Spokane. So it's actually, it's a reflection of both. But so these are the original pygmy nuthatch sightings, then just overlaid onto our some of our basic ecological mapping, the Huck maps. And you can see that they're lining up really well with exactly what you would expect in terms of the distribution of the green areas, which are based on that sort of mid-level watershed, mid-elevation watershed, which is where ponderosa pines tend to dominate.
And so for our State Wildlife Action Plan, we're able to take this information, we can overlay it with the ecological systems, we can relate those species to their habitats, and start to make a more informed project plan to define conservation actions to say, are we working in the right place for this particular species? Have we engaged all the partners that we could potentially engage when we have a better landscape view? And we are looking at crafting projects to put out on eBird that specifically direct our birding constituency to help us fill in the gaps and not just bird all the same great spots where they know they can go see a rare bird, which is really cool, but we want to also get them excited about contributing data where we feel like we have very specific gaps. And so we've got seabird potential projects, we have potential projects on game species like mountain quail, we have other response to management projects that we're crafting, you know, for instance, Columbia sharp-tailed grouse where the big fires have occurred, that kind of thing. So we will be able to use eBird as this tool to market specific projects out to our constituency and get them excited about working with us on those things.
How many birds are in eBird?
All of them? Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yes. So it's
there are literally millions of individual sightings now just for Washington State in eBird, comprising close to 500 species. So virtually every species that's ever been seen in the state has at least one or two eBird dots. And one of the reasons that this two-way communication that Wendy's referring to is so important to us is that at this point somewhere around half of Washington State's active birders are entering their data through eBird. And so through our portal and just through the use of eBird, we're going to have exactly the kind of capability that Wendy talked about just sort of suggesting to birders, as long as you're out in the field, make sure you pay extra attention to pygmy nuthatches for the next couple of years. Here's what we're worried about.
And I have a couple of examples of some good eBird-based projects where our biologists have provided technical guidance, we have a good partnership, and we actually have a very well-crafted, scientifically rigorous project that we're getting good data out of to help us manage species.
If a birder was going out for a day, a good birder, and saw 25 species, they would enter all 25? That would be the hope?
Let's hope so.
It's a very simple process. It all works off this. It takes me, in order to enter 25 species.
It doesn't have to be that way. It can be web interface.
It doesn't have to be, or you can do it on stone tablets. It takes you a little longer. But it's faster than my old field notebook. And I can, after I've been in an area for an hour, it takes me about 3 or 4 minutes, and most birders have always kept field notes. And this is just a way of harvesting those data.
Yellow stuff, yeah, that's based then? Are they reporting it immediately?
Yeah. Yeah, every checklist you turn in is geospatially referenced, usually to known localities.
So, Bill, have you got one of the ringneck pheasants?
Yeah. And you can see this data online anytime you want. You don't have to be a biologist to pull that information. Yes, sir.
Although it is still easier to know the schedule of the trucks.
Okay. We might be off topic. Was there another question over here before we move on?
The yellow shrubs that have that, I just can't
figure out what the yellow is. So the yellow and the green are watershed boundaries. They're not particular habitats. They are watershed boundaries. And within those watershed boundaries, we have associated particular types of vegetation to the observations. And then we write about that in the State Wildlife Action Plan.
Those tend to be the lower elevation, somewhat below the ponderosa pine belt.
So the green scale...
Or the higher, well above.
The green scale on here is a smaller watershed, and the yellow is that larger watershed that encompasses the green watershed. And so as we're looking through this and we map those habitats in both the green and the yellow, we can start to potentially expand our observations, look into habitats in that larger watershed area to see if there's a habitat correlation there. All score?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Back to you.
So we have several other marketed and crowdsourced opportunities that are coming up. There are a huge professional citizen science community of practice. It's evolving quickly. New tools are being developed every single, well, maybe not every day, but often. And a lot of those tools are becoming more and more rigorous, not just focusing on the interest of the naturalist out in the field, but also on the biologist's need to be able to vet and use that information on the back end of things. So we are helping to hone project development, helping to hone tools, and put implementation on the ground through citizen science that will actually inform our work. On the other end of the spectrum are those projects where WDFW biologists actually recruit and train and manage our own volunteers through our service, CERVIS, volunteer management system, and by WDFW policies and procedures. These are so much more labor intensive for our teams, but we have a greater control in protocol delivery. We have greater control in data collection, entry, review, all of those things that make a strong, rigorous scientific project. These projects provide a two-way benefit for WDFW in the fact that we are developing a personal relationship with those citizen scientists that participate with us in the field, and they have a greater understanding of our business through project participation. So WDFW Lands Division biologist Jana Anthony works with Science Division data managers to deliver the Ecological Integrity Monitoring Citizen Science Project on our wildlife areas, providing information about ecosystem health, restoration effectiveness, and invasive species that informs our wildlife area management plans. This is information that we would not have had the capacity to gather just by our wildlife area manager's presence or just by our biologist's presence on the ground. This extra help and capacity, extra workforce, is going to really, truly inform our work there. So since 2012, EIM scientists have contributed valuable information for 5 wildlife areas, Chelan, Scatter Creek, Sinlehecan, Swanson Lakes, and Wells, and an effort valued at more than $18,000. And under contract, 7 science teachers and 133 students from the North Central Education Service District have participated in EIM, and this work contributes to their science-based STEM curricula. EIM will eventually serve all 33 wildlife areas. Also, I wanted to emphasize that bear and cougar specialist Rich Beausoleil and his team have worked with over 100 citizen scientists who donated more than 85,000 hours to collect cougar DNA. This informed a scientific paper published in the Wildlife Society Bulletin in 2014, and at least two more papers are in the works. Another managed project sort of is a hybrid. It takes advantage of that online reporting that's a little more hands-off, and it translates some of that information into a more hands-on training program for volunteers to plug in with a biologist in the field. The Elk Hoof Disease Project, managed by wildlife biologist Brooke George, is a good hybrid of our publicly available reporting tool and a more intensively managed essential WDFW citizen science project. Hunter surveys in 2010 and public reporting through WDFW's Elk Hoof Disease online tools indicated elk potentially affected by hoof disease across more than 3.4 million acres. Nearly impossible at that scale for our biologists to glean information about disease specifics and start to tackle that issue. So using the publicly provided information, Brooke created a more intensive managed citizen science project with rigorous protocol and 5 training workshops. In 2 months of trained citizen science work using the protocols, they gathered 283 observations of groups of elk. They gathered 2,600 individual elk observations. Volunteers contributed over 7,000 miles and contributed 141 surveys with a 96% compliance rate on all the return data. That information obtained from the surveys will continue to inform management decisions about this very important disease. So this is, I have a couple of slides that just sort of give you a quick snapshot of the level of effort that the volunteers contributed. That 6 hours up there was spent in commuting as well as conducting a survey throughout Western Washington. And here's another quick snapshot. The slide shows elk group observations in southwestern Washington. The zero, the smallest green dot on the map, means a survey was conducted, but elk were not observed. So in addition to being hoof disease-related information, we're also getting some interesting demographic information that can be applied to and included with other survey information that we gather. So WDFW district biologists, in response to and diversity biologists, in response to a public petition and an upcoming status review for Western Gray Squirrel, worked together with Science Division to develop a range-wide survey, essentially from Okanagan to Klickitat counties, kicking off a multi-year effort using citizen scientists and our own staff. This extensive area covered by our biologists with help from citizen scientists throughout the survey regions included an organized volunteer coordination effort through Pacific Biodiversity Institute partners. This helps us leverage our other partners' interest in our work and gets a little more people on the ground, so we get a little more information out of the projects that we would ordinarily be doing by ourselves or with our own volunteers. One of the best examples, and this kind of ties back in with the eBird example that Bill was talking about earlier. This is a partner-managed project through Audubon Washington, the Sagebrush Songbirds Project, wherein WDFW research scientist Matt Vanderhagen and biometrician Eli Karen contributed survey design and protocol. We helped with training and provided a little support financially as well as in person to help guide volunteers. We worked on data types and tools, provided training and other technical support, but the volunteer coordination and field implementation wholly belongs to our partners at Audubon Washington. Data quality is influenced by the protocol and study design and the autonomy of the participants and our ability to coach those folks through that process. But we are getting a tremendous amount of data from that partnership based on a project that we essentially crafted with them to meet our data structure. This last spring and summer, Audubon Washington led year two of a 12-county Eastern Washington citizen science project focused on three sagebrush songbirds. Audubon recruited, trained, and deployed 114 volunteers to do 186 surveys on 66 federal, state, and land trust land sites. The end-of-season annual lessons learned help improve the project delivery and the data quality for the next season. So this data will inform our work at WDFW, priorities for Audubon Washington conservation initiatives, as well as the Western Governors Association Crucial Habitat Assessment Tool. And these partners are winning awards and accolades nationally for this work. And one last partner implemented project with WDFW technical guidance is the Cascade Carnivore Project, started in 2008. Implemented in Southern Washington Cascades to update the status reports of rare carnivores, long-term monitoring, and connectivity analysis. So WDFW funds the project in part through our ALEA grants, and our district biologist David Anderson and colleagues provide technical guidance. Volunteers are recruited by the Cascade Carnivore Project, and because they are part of an ALEA grant, these volunteers register through our own volunteer management system. It's a non-invasive presence-absence survey that employs baited remote wildlife camera stations and snow tracking, trail transects, as well as DNA collection. So just a couple of quick slides to sort of leave you with a snapshot of where we are headed and why the Citizen Science Initiative is really important to us. Not only does it give us another avenue to engage our constituents in places where we might not ordinarily be plugging them in and giving them an avenue to understand our business, but it also gives us information to make really good decisions, gives us capacity to gather that information that we just would not have ordinarily. So the statement summarizes the findings of a University of Washington publication released in January of 2015, looking at about 338 citizen science projects. And the figure on the right from the Ecological Society of America illustrates the rise of citizen science data in peer-reviewed publications.
And that exponential rise is very similar to what we're seeing in terms of rise of, say, eBird Northwest use amongst Northwest birders. It's just, it is truly exponentially increasing. It's.
I know that the concept of citizen science was not embraced by the academy for a long time because of snootiness.
There's still a little bit of that.
It's encouraging to see how fast it's climbed recently. So the acceptance rate must be.
Well, and I have to say, some of that acceptance rate is because scientists have gotten engaged in really crafting the practice so that we have better data vetting tools and we understand what our limitations are when we employ volunteers in this way. Mm-hmm. So we've gotten a little bit better at asking the right questions, putting the right people in the field, and then vetting that data in a better way.
It's also a reflection of changing technologies. These are truly game changers for getting accurate, useful citizen science data out of the field very, very quickly. And so these have played a major role. And the other part is that, as well, the scientific community is learning how to do big data analysis. Mm-hmm. And that's changed things a lot, too.
How do citizen scientists learn about the program? Is there programs in public education with schools or through clubs? Or I'm wondering how people learn about this to get this nice bar graph going up.
So right now for WDFW, we have a citizen science projects page on our webpage to get people involved in particular projects. We also do quite a lot of eBird-related outreach to get people engaged in those particular projects. But there's a Citizen Science Association. A lot of teachers are plugging into that association, as well as finding ways through STEM to plug into agencies that already have active citizen science programs. Mm-hmm. The Ecological Integrity Monitoring is certainly one of those that we have at WDFW.
Okay.
Word of mouth is also is one of those things that becomes very important over time. Once something amongst a particular avocation group, amongst a particular hobby group, once you get somewhere above 20-25% penetration in terms of knowledge of that, it begins to take off very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. So a large part of it is that, and we're trying to work all those levels.
Well, and I'll also plug service. I actually had to close a project because I was getting so much enrollment through service.
Excellent.
and had to stop promoting it in other ways. So the department volunteer website, I think, is a pretty effective tool for citizen science as well.
Thank you. So we're hoping, as we sort of dip our toe in the water with some particular projects and we get some good information and we start developing some more relationships around particular citizen science projects, that we also figure out a way to expand our network. There are other states that have master naturalist programs and chapters that engage people on a more eco-regional level and give them self-directed projects to be able to employ on the state Fish and Wildlife Agency's behalf. So there's some great future out there to really expand that network and get people involved.
We want to be known as an agency that does good science. We also want to be known as an agency that understands citizen science and does good citizen science. It'll be good for us in a lot of ways. It really helps us in terms of our credibility, particularly with the non-traditional users. Helps dramatically with that credibility.
Thank you.
To engage people that we would not have engaged. And I also think it's a great way to engage youth in getting them excited to doing real things, which will, you know, pay off dividends in the long run in many different ways. So I would like to see us continue to be a leader in all of this.
We didn't have time to describe much about the partnership projects we've had with Pacific Education Institute and their ability to get a lot of these things into the school curricula, but there's a lot of progress on that front as well.
I think Margaret's going to come for lunch today, actually.
Oh, good.
I gave a talk at the State Audubon meeting a couple weeks ago, and a lot of people that probably wouldn't have engaged with WDFW were singing praises of it for a lot of these same things, which was really, as we look to diversify our users, our customers, you know, not by distancing from the traditional users, but we have to look beyond for all the reasons that we all know. So thank you. Other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Go forth and do great things.